This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
We got a lot to talk about this morning. We're going to be getting to the latest in the Lindsay Clancy case, where things are at as the defense is getting ready to rest and hand it over to a jury very early next week. We'll get to that. But first this morning, we're going to be starting with the latest in the Nolan Wells investigation and where all of that is at. Nolan Wells' phone left Horn Island with his friends on July 4th. His body didn't. 6 weeks later, that phone has still not been examined. And that's where the story is at. And the family, the DA, and the friends' attorneys are all pointing fingers at each other for the delay. So what the hell is going on? That's been my reaction. Here to help us answer that question, Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, and of course my co-host is always Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent chief for the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. So this is a piece of evidence, but I think we need to take a step back even further and go, this is not a criminal investigation as of right now either. So when we're thinking of evidence and things being obtained, you kind of almost say you have to hit that level of it being criminal to get there. So maybe that answers part of this, but it's still a rather odd thing, considering we don't know what happened to Nolan Wells. On July 15th, the family and District Attorney McGrath agreed to a joint forensic examination. Both sides, experts, possibly the FBI, at a digital forensics lab in the Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College. No date apparently ever been set, though. A month has now passed, and now the DA is sending a demand letter out to the family saying, you got 48 hours to give us the phone. Sounds like the DA is done playing games with critical evidence. How did we get here? Eric, people want answers. The people who seemingly want the most answers are the ones holding the actual device that can probably provide most of them.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, it's sort of intuitive to think that, my gosh, if a family lost their son under unknown circumstances and they want it to be further investigated, you would expect them to want to be cooperative with the government to provide the phone, to provide other information. It sounds like that probably hasn't happened. What is the reason for that? I think there are a number of potential reasons for that, but I think the ultimate effect is that it is hampering the possible criminal investigation that could take place without turning this over. And like I said, I think there are several possible reasons for that.
The first thing that came to my mind is, okay, in other investigations, and not that, you know, not everything is the same, nothing's ever the same, but if you're in the middle of a criminal investigation, which this is not yet, it may never be. If the authorities want your device, they're going to come get that device if it may reveal information about a crime. I know they've agreed for transparency. Here's how we're going to handle this. And I think that's great. As transparent as you can be on this, extra steps need to be taken just because of all the eyes that are on this for the sake of everyone involved and people not being accused of things that they didn't do or people being prosecuted that do need to be prosecuted. Transparency is key. But here we are. We're 6 weeks in. Either side, I mean, there really isn't an excuse here. If you want to get the phone dump and the data off of it, Crump's team certainly has the ability to get that done. Apparently, it has not been done. I'm failing to see what the problem is here. If this is a leaning into a criminal direction, wouldn't they have just went and gotten the phone by now?
You would think so, and that would certainly be an option. You know, in terms of how the government can come into possession of evidence, one is through consent. So maybe they're hoping that the family is going to ultimately provide this without the government having to go through the motions of the alternative. The alternative is a search warrant, and that's a judicial process. You have to show probable cause. You have to go seize the phone. It's a lot more hands-on and a lot more kind of intensive than if the family were to just volunteer.
Yeah, and I'm not so up on how the grand jury system works, Eric, and and you and Bob much more are, obviously. Is this, because I'm always looking for tempos, I'm looking for behavior tells, you know, kind of as a soothsayer on that kind of stuff. And I'm curious, is this tempo, again, from the layman's term sitting out here, of the grand jury not having that, is that indicative, as Tony was saying, of criminal charges possibly not being pursued? And if so, I'm going to make a two-part question, which is horrendous, and you should never do that. And the second part is, after they've, well, yeah, so after they've had that phone so long, is it really, I mean, the ability to suppress then goes up, doesn't it, because of tampering or people, in other words, no chain of custody since the event?
Yeah, so in terms of the grand jury piece, those are very secretive proceedings. So it's always public whether a grand jury has been convened and whether it's actually investigating a specific matter. So I don't exactly know the status of that. But if there was a grand jury proceeding, that grand jury has subpoena power.
Right.
They, in fact, can issue a subpoena saying, hey, we think the contents of this phone would be helpful to have us analyze whether a crime has been committed. And that subpoena can actually be sent through the grand jury process. And yeah, I think there are a number of potential chain of custody issues that could arise as well.
So do you, I'm sorry, Tony. So does that mean that there, and is there, do you think there's a grand jury convened on this or not, do you think?
Yet.
Yeah. I would believe that there is. I think it would be, it would make sense considering all the public fervor about it, the allegations that there may have been criminal or, untoward sort of conduct. I think that that is very ripe for a grand jury proceeding.
Data is going to be data on a phone, but you can answer this a heck of a lot better than I can. 6 weeks in here to this, this phone has been in the hands of civilians. I don't know. I have no idea if they could access it or not. I'm assuming we do know that it has been accessed because her mother has said flat out that there was nothing on the Snapchat. She found that suspicious. That has been translated in the internet to his phone was wiped, at which there is an evidence of that. That's conjecture as to the assumption as to why there was nothing on the Snapchat, which can also be readily explained by a lot of people too, going, he was in the water, the phone was on the boat, there's no service, that's why there's nothing on the Snapchat. But cross the T's, dot the I's, find out if anything was actually deleted. The fact that this phone has just been sitting over there or in the custody of civilians, is there concern of chain of custody at this point? I mean, if anything does get wiped or is changed or altered, that would show up in the chain of access between Nolan going missing and this phone sitting in this house for 6 weeks. And I'm not suggesting anything improper, but I mean, it is a chain of custody thing. If the police had it moving around amongst themselves and nobody's documenting it went from this office to that office for 6 weeks, that would be a huge deal. The fact that it's happening on the civilian end of things, is it that big of a deal? I guess it just seems it would be very big if it were in the hands of one group, but not the other. But it's still evidence that, you know, is pretty critical to this case.
Tony, sort of hypothetically, let's say that the government comes into possession of this phone one way or the other, and there appears to be evidence of criminal activity or you know, not Nolan Wells necessarily, but just evidence on the phone. And then someone is charged with a crime down the road, hypothetically. If I'm that person's attorney, I'm going to have a field day with this digital forensics piece of this because, there it appears to have been multiple individuals who have handled this phone, possibly manipulated the phone. You know, if a lay person's going through a phone and they're in an app and they think that they see no activity, but perhaps they accidentally deleted something, or perhaps they accidentally engaged in their own activity, I'm going to say, hey, look, how reliable would the results of the forensic analysis of this phone be if it's been potentially manipulated, potentially distorted in terms of the contents of the phone on the date of the incident? That could be significantly different than the contents of the phone when the government gets it. And that gap in time could really be exploited by defense.
Yeah, that's my next follow-up question to that, Eric, is, so say, again, world of hypothetical here, because, you know, the family is doing the best they can, I'm sure, you know, lost their son. It's horrendous. But say in a situation where you have this kind of time delay and it's someone's phone like that, and they open it up and they see there's stuff on there that they don't want on there. They don't want discovered because it's someone they love. It could be incriminating or embarrassing to them in some way. And they remove that information, but keep the things they think are relative to something else. Could they be charged with tampering? Or anything else?
I think that they would be reasonably at risk of a charge of tampering with evidence, because usually what that requires is a person has knowledge that this evidence could be material and relevant to a criminal investigation or future case, and then you alter the condition of it. That could be a problem. Now, I doubt, you know, practically speaking, anyone would go after the family of a dead right. kid mm-hmm. because they're messing with the phone. But I think that if it came to a case, the defense would say, hey, this is basically criminal tampering that the family engaged in. You didn't charge them. This thing is all over the board. We can't trust any of these results.
So, and one more follow-up to that is, so when people take actions or don't take actions, the motivations generally come down to fear of the consequences of taking those actions. So put on your conjecture hat again for a sec. What would be the reason that you could hypothesize that someone wouldn't want to turn over the phone, you know, outside of the things that we've talked about? Any other ideas?
Yeah, I think there are several potential reasons. So one reason is that there is some sort of problematic content on the phone. The family doesn't want that getting in the hands of the government, possibly being disclosed to the public. And that sensitive private information might not even relate to this incident. It might just be, you know, internet searches or what have you. Another yeah. possible reason that comes to mind, Robin, is, you know, Nolan Wells is a black dude. And the judicial system historically has not served that group in a fair and just fashion. And certainly Ben Crump, his attorney, has voiced concerns that this is being mishandled in part due to race issues, and people can have different opinions on that. But I think perhaps the family is reluctant to really trust the government to say, hey, we trust you. Let me give you my dead son's phone and everything that might be on it, and we trust you're going to do the right thing with it. Maybe the family doesn't have such trust.
Fair points.
True. And all very accurate. There's a lot of reason not to have trust in Mississippi. They still have tons of issues that are not ancient history. I would also argue, though, that Ben Crump is not exactly the most trustworthy character. He's been tweeting out inaccuracies, misinformation, you know, flat out accusations against people who had nothing to do with this, and never really correcting the record either when he's tweeting out pictures that aren't accurate and things, and trying to connect things to this case, which end up getting a lot of people inflamed, getting a lot of people angry. And it's not responsible to send people down angry routes based on inaccurate information or just flat out lies. When I first heard about this, the first thing that came to my mind was this, and Robin, give me your take. And when I'm trying to think of what's inspiring someone not to turn this phone over,
right.
Is, well, maybe this grandstanding that Crump has done. I'm not saying the family, because Crump's been the one that's been the grandstander right. here. The family has made statements. The mom making a statement out loud of, you know, the Snapchat's empty. And then Crump takes it to the next level of, things are deleted and it was wiped. That's not what she exactly said. She pointed out that was and should be looked at. Fair enough statement. Agreed. But when you take it to that next level that gets accusatory of other people doing nefarious things to hide a crime, that takes it to another level. And these statements have been made. They're in the ether. You have whole groups of people that are salivating, believing that something nefarious happened here. And look, if it did, we're going to follow it. But we just don't know. The fact that all that's been out there, and then maybe some cooler heads have prevailed in the last 6 weeks. Maybe some people have also looked at the phone going, yeah, honey, that phone where it says that it's missing, that's just because the phone wasn't, it didn't have service. It wasn't accessed. Maybe they got their answer back from Snapchat by now of, yeah, nobody posted anything. That kind of kills the whole vitriol. That kind of kills all the grandstanding, and it makes you look like a fucking fool. I'm wondering if that might be part of the reason why that phone's not been turned over, because there are certain truths that don't necessarily align with the grandstanding that's been done for 6 weeks.
Yeah, and so grandstanding, you know, so let's look at that. Again, fear is a motivator, and a fear of what? And so someone, again, hypothetically like Crump, this is an individual that relies upon his brand, his messaging, and when you jump out front on and make statements like law enforcement does, and they have to backpedal because they said something stupid too fast, what happens is if you have an incongruency of message, it erodes your brand. It erodes the public trust. It erodes a lot about who you are. If that's all who you are, that's what your identity comes down to, is that people trust me because my messaging is accurate and it's on point, and I'm an activist and a righteous person for these misrepresented groups, whatever it is. And if you fear exposure of incongruency of message, that could also delay it as a possibility. Not saying it is. I'm just saying, again, remember, always thinking in terms of what's the fear for taking the action that the individual has? And so then we just have to look at the data we have and see what fits.
Who's driving the ship? It makes me wonder. Is it the family that's driving the ship, or is the family has Crump behind the wheel here and they're kind of been at his mercy? And I don't know that they're steering them in the right direction. The direction they should be steering for is truth, not rage. Rage if it's called for, but let's determine if it should be called for first.
Well, remember, so we have bifurcated best interests here. Again, going to human behavior, humans are always going to act in their own best interest. The best interest of the family is the family, is their son. That is a singular best interest. Now, Crump comes in, he's got a bifurcated at least best interest. He's got a best interest for the family, he's got a best interest for himself. And so you have two balancing best interests at play for him. So he's got multiple factors he's considering when taking action. The family has one. And so that actually plays into it for me as well. I'm sorry, I hijacked everything.
It's a lot of conjecture, you know? I mean, at the end of the day, we just don't know. And that's what I come to every time on this case. We just don't know. Could it have been something? Sure. But there's no evidence as of yet that points there. And the behavior evidence, the track record of the people and the friends and all that, there's been no leakage in 6 months. There's no weird videos out there of like them being secretly Klans people and they hate their black friend. None of that exists. So what's going on?
I'm seeing a lot of very good faith actions by all those involved, the friends and everyone else. So, and again, when you have no leakage with this kind of climate in which we live in, I think that's an indicator, not a complete, but a decent indicator of what's there or not there.
Yeah. There are certainly questions that deserve to be answered, and there's extra caution that needs to be handled on this case and extra dotting of T's and I's. Definitely. Just to really make sure for everybody involved. But at the end of the day, the facts are the facts. We just need to get to them. That's the thing. So anyway, your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. The links are there in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Well, let's go over to another case that is still making headlines because, well, it's still out there in the ether. And one of the key reasons it's still out there in the ether is because a certain cell phone still hasn't been looked at. Nolan Wells' phone, the key piece of evidence that could settle the loudest claim in this case, that somebody wiped it, that something went on. And now we're, 7 weeks after he died? No agency has examined it. The family says it's ready. The DA says she can't discuss it. And the phone has been sitting as of this morning, as of this recording. I don't know if it's gone anywhere yet, but hopefully it goes somewhere soon. Jen Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, with myself and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. The hell? I mean,
it's a good one.
What the hell? I was kind of shocked. I was just trying to do an update on this case the other day, like, oh, what's new? I haven't heard anything. And like, oh, the phone hasn't gone anywhere yet. Jen, I mean, from an investigative criminal standpoint, how the hell is that even a possibility this many weeks into this, unless it's not being looked at as a criminal investigation?
Well, they've got to look at the phone.
Yeah,
going on. This is kind of a no-brainer. It needs to be analyzed to make sure nothing has been erased. It needs to be looked at to see what communications took place. It also needs to be looked at to see the last time it was held, touched. Like, when did he check in? When did
Everything.
Everything needs to be looked at. And it's a no-brainer. It's going to have to be reviewed.
So, Jen, and we talked about this with Eric Faddis the other day, and now this is an area I would listen to a lot because you had a lot of reps in this area when it comes to data collection and investigative techniques like this. What do you think happens? So, even at this point, so they get the phone, but the family's had it for so long. How can they use that or not use it? I mean, do you think it'll stand up under scrutiny by the defense or the prosecution? I mean, first of all, it's a really tainted piece of evidence to me. It's like leaving, to me, when you have a phone like that in the hands of the family for so long, it's as if you have the crime scene and you left the tape down. You let everyone traipse through it all the time because everyone has access to it.
I tell you, though, the beauty of digital evidence is if anything was done after the fact, it's going to have those timestamps.
Yeah, that's true.
And so from that standpoint, that's why your crime scene's kind of protected. It's sort of like if you have a crime scene like you just discussed and everybody's trampling through it, but I've got videotape all over the place showing who's trampling.
Good analogy, yeah. So
I really like the fact that it was always my favorite piece of evidence, always the one that at least I would ask the prosecutor, hey, listen, for our cool charts we're going to put up and everything, let's do it last. Because the juries eat it up. And then in talking to juries afterwards, they will tell you, you know, digital evidence has no ambition. It has no, it's just
it's there.
It just is.
Yeah.
It just is.
It's so ones and zeros. It'll answer questions. Yeah. Yeah. No matter what you want it to be. Okay. So I'm trying to wrap my mind around any other investigation where a critical piece of evidence just sits in the hands of the people who originally had it for all of this time. That's the part I'm having a hard time because I'm like, well, where's the incentive here to not have this thing examined? And I mean, it really could benefit both sides depending on what's on it. Is this both sides not wanting to open Pandora's box? Because on one side, you got the claims that Snapchat was deleted and this and that. And well, open up the phone. Let's find out. Let's get the info from Snapchat. Let's find out what that says. Was anything actually deleted? If it's no, well, then that whole people went in and messed with the phone theory is all bullshit. And then all the vitriol on top of that doesn't make any sense because it's based on nothing. Or we open the phone and it shows a lot of deleted shit. And it shows information that doesn't look so lovely. Then the whole, well, this is all an overreaction over there. That doesn't look good. Both sides really, you know, could stand to look pretty shitty on this, depending on what the phone reveals. One side is the law. One side has subpoena authority, has authority to go in and actually just take the damn evidence and look at it. Why haven't any of those levers been pulled? Why this is, I don't know. I'm kind of baffled by this whole thing of just, how has this been sitting here for this long and that lever hasn't been pulled? I get the patience in the first week or two, maybe. We're going to do this together, so it's all the up and up. We certainly want transparency, but at some point, we're going to get to the answers here. We got to kind of look at the evidence.
Well, from the prosecution side, they want this phone. I think it's going to prove their point. Nothing was erased. There's nothing nefarious that went on, and I think they really want to get the phone analyzed. Remember, though, the parents came out and this side, Crump, he came out and they said, listen, we've got our own digital experts and they're going to look at it and what they need to do. So you've got that side of it. Who did they hire? Has the phone been looked at by them? It's kind of this nebulous. I'm not sure what the answer is. And then, of course, it's got to be given over. The government doesn't want to do a subpoena in this case, in my opinion, or a warrant, because they want the family to cooperate. They want to do what we call a consent search where they sign it over. We'll see, though. I mean, I am surprised that it hasn't been reviewed by the government, but it will be.
You know, on the conjecture side, do we know if the families sent it out for private, you know, private investigator to do it? Because that's my question is, so if the family then did hire someone and they have their own forensic people analyzing the phone, does that, how does that work? You know, if you're going to use it then for prosecution, will the prosecution use the same people that did it? I mean, that's kind of weird to me.
Yeah, no matter what, the prosecution will use their people.
Right.
They're going to use the, whether they go with the FBI, the FBI is involved in this. And I think they're involved in this just for this reason.
Yeah.
So I think that they will go to an FBI expert that will.
So what happens to then? So say that the family comes up with different stuff on that phone, or they have a different theory or a different assessment of it. Will they include that, not include? Will defense include it? It looks like the SOI, it looks really messy when you do stuff like this.
Yeah, you know, the experts can battle it out, but at the end of the day, like we just talked about,
right, it is what it is.
Objective evidence. There's zero subjectivity to it, unless you start making things up about a search that happened at 2:28 in the morning, like what happened in Reed's case. But typically speaking, you're going to have, you know, very competent experts, and they should agree, kind of like with the autopsy.
Right.
Remember how in the autopsy, they really kind of agreed?
Yeah.
Do you see the
we don't have the state's, you know, results yet, and that's sitting there for the grand jury. I guess my question is, you know, there's talk that there's going to be a grand jury. Maybe there is a grand jury. I mean, that can take some time, obviously, and they want to present the phone evidence to the grand jury. Where is that at right now, Jen, in your opinion? Is there a grand jury that's been convened? We don't know for sure. It's all secretive. But at this point, what does your experience tell you?
Yeah, it's been convened and they're slowly processing and listening to all the evidence. I think one thing that can be confusing is that a grand jury sits there, say, for 8 or 12 hours straight, like trial, and listens to all of this. It's typically not how it works. Typically how it works is you will have one or two witnesses slated for a particular day, and that grand jury will hear from those one or two witnesses, and then that's it. And then the next week, they'll come in on their designated day, Wednesday from 10 to noon, whatever their time frame is, and they'll get two more witnesses. So the process is usually a lot longer than you might think because it's not like trial.
You know, you've done a lot of these, and basically from the tempo that we're seeing or not seeing and all the behavior tells we're seeing from the outside looking in, are you thinking this is going someplace yet, or you don't think it's going someplace, or it's still too early to tell?
Well, I'm judging this opinion, Robin, in large part based on the interviews I've seen of the kids,
right,
of the kids that were on the boat and what they say happened and everything in huge part of this, right?
Right.
And also all the factors we know. And Tony, you're right. We don't have the autopsy results back. But if you recall very early on, which upset a lot of people, he alluded to the fact that there's nothing to show foul play.
Right.
And that was based on that autopsy, because I've mentioned this, that right when you, as an investigator, you're in there with the ME, they already know, you know, what's going on, mm-hmm, very early on, what the ME is going to say. So I think this is going to be an accident. I really do. But I think the grand jury will continue to look at it and probably come to that same conclusion.
How long do you think, what do you think they'll wait? I guess they'll just wait till the digital evidence does come in from the analysis, if they do eventually get it, and that'll be the final thing that'll close it out, do you think? It'll be the final thing that kind of tips it over to do some sort of prosecution against someone, because they then have to identify who they think did something?
Well, I don't think the digital analysis will be as important. In this case, I think it's going to be witness interviews. I think will be very important. You know, did somebody see, you know, a fight? Did somebody see anything that lends itself to the belief that, you know, his friends murdered him?
And do you think we'd have any wobbles in that area right now if there was some testimony that was going to lend to that? Because we haven't seen any, and there are a lot of people who are present for that. You would think that, you know, social media would have some sort of leakage coming on and off on that.
Yeah, I like the word wobble. We don't see any weebles wobbling, nothing. Yeah. It seems
wobbles, yes,
in this case. So I just don't think it's there. But because of the infused racist, you know, undertones, they've just got to do it with the grand jury. In other words, look at it.
The The Congressional Black Caucus asked the DOJ for a federal review. The NAACP joined the family's legal team, and Al Sharpton has said everything on the phone was erased. Again, a lot of conjecture, a lot of claims being made on evidence that hasn't really been looked at yet. The goal is getting to the truth here. If the family and the local authorities haven't figured their shit out enough yet to get this phone reviewed in a way that's acceptable to both parties. Maybe there should be some sort of federal intervention here, since these two parties can't seem to figure this out yet. Not necessarily that needs to go to a level of a murder investigation, but like, guys, we got to take care of this. This we need to actually look at this. What does this look like? Is there anything that should be done or can be done, or do we just rely on them to eventually get their shit together and take a look at this device?
Well, I'm going to call a spade here.
Yeah.
I mean, part of the reason that Sharpton and, Crump and all these people keep ginning up all of this is because the money keeps pouring in.
It makes them money. I know. I agree.
Yeah. And the more you can throw out there, oh, now we need a federal investigation. Crump is a licensed practitioner of law. He should know there is no chance that there's FBI venue here. And so the FBI is never, in my opinion, going to get involved. Shoot, they're not even involved other than peripherally and as a partner, not a lead, on the Nancy Guthrie case. And that case, you could argue, has venue. They're just, that's such puffery to
me. It's grandstanding, yeah.
Yeah.
It's grandstanding. I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's nothing to, I mean, again, I get that there's that move by stating that is grandstanding, but at the same point, nothing is happening. So it's like, well, somebody's got to kick this down the road a little bit to get somewhere. But, who's that going to be? I don't know the answer to yet, but still no real answers here in this case. We'll see where this goes. I mean, your best guess, Jen, I mean, how long till we determine if a grand jury comes back with a true bill or not here on if this goes anywhere?
Well, if you look at the photos from the beach that day, there were hundreds of people there.
Yeah.
That means there are hundreds of people to interview.
True.
There's also a lot of video that could exist and photographs that could exist. There's the digital phone we just talked about that seemingly still hasn't been analyzed. It's going to be weeks, if not months.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just think how long it's taking to get through the ring cams in the neighborhood surrounding Nancy Guthrie. We're still hearing, oh, and by the way, there's thousands of more videos we haven't looked at. Oh, really? On a beach with hundreds or thousands of kids and then trying to decipher who's in what shot and all of the evidence that's been turned in from people not knowing what they have. That's a lot. That is a lot to get through. And it does take humans to do that. All right. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts there. That's going to wrap it up. All right. We all survived. Until next time.
Good day.
Yes.
Good day.
Break the Case. Jennifer Coffin-Daffer. Go check it out. YouTube, wherever you get podcasts. Robin Drake's latest book, It Is This. It's Not All About Me. It's available wherever you get books and on Amazon. Leave a review there. Until next time, for Jen, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.